Welcome to Fire Engineering Podcasts, where each day you'll hear a variety of voices speaking on timely topics facing the American Fire Service. The best way to keep up with fire engineering is via our free daily e-newsletter. Learn more at fireengineering.com/e-newsletter.
Hello, everybody. This is Joe Pernesti, and welcome to another edition of In Their Own Words on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio. And once again, I want to first thank Chief Halton and his staff at Fire Engineering for allowing me this opportunity to bring to you the authors of the articles you're reading in Fire Engineering Magazine and online, and having them, just like the title says, in their own words, bring to you a little bit more insight into the articles and help you along the way in your fire service career. Today, we are talking about May Days, and we have the legendary Don Abbott with me, with us today, and also Chief Halton will probably be joining us somewhere along the line on this podcast, so that'll be something to look forward to, also taking time out of his busy day to join us. But like I said, we're going to be talking about Project May Day, and if you and the founder of the website, and really something that I felt was long overdue, and that is, you know, someone doing actual research into May Days and their impact and dissecting them. So with that, we're very fortunate to have Don Abbott. Don, thank you for joining us today. And if you would, for those listeners, I can't imagine there's too many of them out there that don't know about you. If you would, a little bit about yourself and the Project May Day website.
Sure. I'm retired out of the Indianapolis area after 24 years on a career fire department, which is now the Indianapolis Fire Department. For 10 years, my wife and I traveled the country doing something called Abbottville, which was a 12 by 24 foot diorama with a bunch of small buildings, a little fire trucks, little firemen, basically reenacting real incidences and letting people fight those same problems that the original host department did. Then I had a job offer from my good friend, Chief Alan Bernasini. I came to Phoenix and basically sort of built, developed, and coordinated the command training center for the Phoenix Fire Department for 8 years, and retired, and basically started Project May Day 5.5 years ago. Chief Bernasini and I were very close and we used to meet quite often, and one day we talked about how can we prevent May Days, and one of the comments he made, you know, how many are there? Where are they at? You know, how did they take place? So he put a bug in my ear, and I started doing research and found out there wasn't any information out there really telling us the exact data. And so that's when we started, and I gathered a few professional people that volunteered to help me put this program together and to monitor basically our surveys and the components of data and information we collected.
Now, the Project May Day, you know, when you started out, did you think that it would ever get to the number and to where it is today? You know, what were some of the things that you were thinking of when you started it with Chief Bernasini? Some of the original thoughts, if any of them changed or gotten better, or just your overall philosophy on this website and that information?
Well, I figured if we got a couple hundred fire departments to participate, we would be really, really lucky. As of June 30th of this year, we basically have data, information, interviews, surveys on 7,293 May Days in 5.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Before we get into the exact little nuances and the breakdown, the one thing that I really applaud you on that I really love, and I think the listeners and those that are really into the job and are utilizing your data to keep their members safe, is that you break down, you know, between volunteer, part-time, and paid. And while, you know, the fire knows no difference, you know, what's your occupation, if you're paid or part-time or size, you break it down. And I really applaud you, because in this profession, a lot of times we try to paint a broad brush with everything that we do and all the data and everything. And that sometimes doesn't always work. And I think Chief Alden will say, you know, he says it all the time, and, you know, firefighting's local, and it is, you know, secular in a lot of phases. And I want to applaud you on that. And I was just wondering, you know, if you could, you know, some of the biggest differences that you have found that, you know, since you broke it down into for our listeners, if you're a part-time department or a volunteer department, or, you know, depending on, you know, part-time and part paid or whatever you want to look in the volunteer category. And if you're full paid and professional fire department, you want to look in the other category. Was there anything in particular that drove you to separate them? And how has it been as far as separating them? Did you get the positive feedback? I think you should get and are getting on it.
We're getting good feedback. One of the problems that we have with mainly volunteer departments is it takes about somewhere between 7 and 10 hours to fill out our paperwork, to do the things that we ask to do. And most volunteer fire departments don't have the luxury of having personnel to do that. I think there's three things that we have found that are dramatically different. One is that the volunteer May Days take place in the early hours or during the day, primarily because that's when they have the least resources, mainly people. And the second thing that we find, and it sort of ties in, is establishing RIT teams early because of a lack of resources. It just can't be done. You know, do you establish the RIT team or do you fight the fire and put it out? You know, I mean, it's that right balance that many of them struggle with. And one of the areas that the volunteers do much better with, and it's probably because many of them either don't do it or they do it under a different circumstance and situation, is number one in our types of May Days for the first 2.5 years for career departments was falling through or off roofs. It's been consistent in the volunteer side that it's been number 6 or 7, you know. So, and I think that's, you know, along with the fact as I mentioned earlier, the resources is the biggest difference. When we look at how many people and apparatus are on the scene at a volunteer incident when a May Day occurs compared to a career, it's usually, you know, careers 2-to-1, you know, type thing. So that's the biggest difference I see between the two.
We are now joined by the Editor-in-Chief of Fire Engineering, Chief Bobby Halden. You're there?
Yeah, I am, Joe. Don, good to hear your voice.
Good.
Same, hey, Bobby. Chief,
thanks for joining us. Chief, you didn't miss too much there. What we are getting into is Don's article and a little bit of background. His article is in the June of 2020's Fire Engineering. And
you know, I think I read it.
Okay. I bet you did.
You do read that magazine.
Huh? He did. Shows that you
got a little. I got a little something to do with that magazine.
One of the things, Don, that I do want to touch on a little bit, and welcome Chief Halton's input on, is when we're talking May Days and you send out the background information and the surveys, have you found that firefighters now are a little bit more open to answering your questions? So when someone has a May Day and they reach out to you that you described earlier, are they hesitant? Is there still that embarrassment or any stigmas, or has it gotten better?
I think it's gotten better. Number one is we don't use any names unless they volunteer to release their name, and then we'll use it. I think that's got a little bit to do with it. I think most firefighters, after we have a chance, one of my people, in talking to them, explaining to them that what happened to you is going to happen to at least three or four other people. Share what you learned. Share your mistakes, because that's how we learn. So
right. And so in the article, I want to jump into the article. You know, you describe the types of Maydays, and again, you know, they seem to always be the same items, the same things, the same issues. But I want to touch on communications first that you talked about. And what are some of the important the data as far as communications? Because when we read about line of duty death reports or we read about close calls, there's always that problem of communications. And I really want you, again, and that's why it's called In Your Own Words, what you have found or what you personally would want to relay to command officers or firefighters in general about communications and how important they are on the fire ground and what they mean as far as that prevention or, you know, after the Mayday, just the overall aspect of fire ground communications.
I think communications wise, first of all, almost 36% of all Maydays are missed on the first call. And I think part of the problem is that we try to run a lot of our fire operations, mainly command, with a portable radio. So you have a 5-watt talking to a 5-watt. And what we have found is many of the batteries on these portable radios have exceeded their lifespan, and therefore they're not holding a charge. So it goes from 5 watts to 4 watts.
Wow.
You know, and what happens is I urge people to get in a vehicle because the radio inside a vehicle is somewhere between 45 and 50 watts. You know, so you're operating with a better system inside a vehicle than you are trying to run a fire as an IC off of a portable radio.
You know, one of the things too, and so, you know, the miscommunications and getting in a vehicle. Do you see now, and I don't want to get into too much of the, you know, East Coast, West Coast kind of thing, because again, as Chief Halton has said many times, and I'll repeat it again, firefighting's local. Do you see any correlation or any increase in those departments that may, on like the East Coast flavor of that boss out in front at that command post outside, whereas maybe as you start going west in our United States or southwest, more of that blue card stationary command. Does that fit right in with what you were saying as far as communications?
Yeah, some. I don't think I see a lot of East Coast fire departments running fires now out of their vehicles as the IC. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of it. I don't think it's, you know, the whole thing. But I do think it's a little bit of it. You know, let me add one other thing that we found. 2 years ago, we brought an audiologist on. And one of the things that she really pointed out, and we're learning this more and more every day because we just started this 2 years ago, this part of it, but not everybody hears the same. You know, and hearing is your ability to hear, but more important, your ability to listen to the radio and basically pick out those things that are important, sometimes get lost because of our hearing. The other issue to that is one of the things that we know for sure is that most company officers who are running their crews do not listen to the radio transmissions of other crews. They're waiting to hear engine 6 being called and they'll answer. Mm-hmm. But they're not really listening to engine 1, engine 5, truck 6, because it ain't them.
Yeah.
They miss a lot of information that's going to happen to them or affect them in about 3 to 4 minutes. And I think that's another issue in itself.
This question goes to both of you, Chief Halton, because of, you know, just your overall, your experience, and Don with doing the data. Why do we keep repeating these things? Why do we, you know, like when we have Don saying something like, okay, you know, the officer doesn't, he waits for engine 16. Will we ever in the fire service in our career see any kind of change in that kind of thought process or attitude, do you think? And why not if we don't?
Chief, you want me to go first? You want to go first?
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
So I think, okay, so there's two separate issues, and Joe, and I think it's a good question to ask, because one of the misconceptions that people have is that people are willfully doing these things. In other words, people are willfully not trying to learn lessons, or they're willfully not paying attention, or they're willfully, committing the same quote unquote errors, when nothing could be further from the truth in reality. And we've got reams of good scientific research and documentation to prove it. When you look at the whole safety first versus the new culture of safety differently, or safety two, or whatever you want to call it, there's depending on what part of the world you're from, right? So the reality is that the human condition, as Don has pointed out, is really not that different than it was 6,000 years ago, and it probably won't be that much different 3,000 years from now. You have a certain amount of bandwidth, and when your working memory gets occupied with the tasks at hand, you tend to be exclusionary, right? You tend to be focused mm-hmm. on your crew and what's going on around you and listening for other things. And when you hear an audible clue, such as engine 16, then you key in, right? So mm-hmm. the key there is to not denigrate or, you know, say, oh, we're making the same old mistakes. Actually, we're not, because very few fires are identical, and very few crews are identical. And even if they were identical people, I have sons that are twins, have different worldviews, and so they'll have different patterns of attention and such. So the idea with what Don is bringing forward is not to castigate, but maybe to look at systems analysis and say, well, if we know that it's difficult for people to capture important information, should important information then be repeated or highlighted or identified as such, so that all of the people who it is going to affect then hear it, right? Mm-hmm. So just saying that, oh, they're not listening. Well, yeah, no kidding. They're listening for maybe noises from the building, or noises from crew members, or they're, you know, that you only have so much bandwidth when you're under pressure and stress, and you're in a highly dynamic environment that you can afford to, you know, it's not like you're casually listening. See, hindsight's a wonderful thing. You know, we know that they didn't hear the message when it was repeated once or twice. What we don't know is what they were concentrating on, or what they were trying to accomplish, or what sure. was occupying their memory. So it's a wickedly complex problem. And to your point, I think Don will agree with us, because we're both kind of long in the tooth. We've been doing this for quite a while. You know, Don, I'm not sure exactly what year you started with Indy, but I believe it was in the 60s. You know, we've gotten dynamically better. We've gotten exponentially more effective and more efficient and more deliberate on the fire ground, and as a result, safer. Right, Don? I mean, I believe wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I believe that too. I think I agree with Bobby. I don't think it's something that we deliberately do. I think it's just something that we've got to understand the various pieces and parts that create those situations, that puts us in those problems. I think that's the biggest thing. One of the people that I work with a great deal, matter of fact, he's working with the RSCB on our air issues, doing the interviews personally, is Dr. Stewart, who's a psychologist. And one of the things we got into a discussion about, and I've talked to several people since, is the term situational awareness. We throw that around a lot, but as he put it, situational awareness was really developed between the ages of 4 and 7. Hmm. And how you use that situational awareness and how you enhance it is what we've got to figure out. You know, how do we bring that situational awareness to the forefront in a much better format to break it down, to see things or hear things that we need to understand that might lead to preventing Maydays. And it's not an easy thing.
And Don's point is really important. And what people don't understand also is that situational awareness is a construct, right? It really doesn't even have a definition. So as a construct, yeah, you've got to be really careful because people say, well, they lost situational awareness. Well, no, they didn't. Something else was occupying their working memory that may not have been as critical in hindsight as what turned out to be critical. So there's a huge amount of work that's going into that right now. So to Don's point, you know, we really, how do we keep people better apprised of the changing conditions? That there was a great article by Bill Gustin. I don't know if you saw it, Don. He put it up on Fire Engineering for us the other day. It was a battalion chief who got a radio transmission who said that the guys, he said, you know, I want you guys to come out of the building. And the guys inside said, hang on, one more minute. And he said, no, you're not seeing what I'm seeing. Right. And great point. Right. So that was a really good example of what Don's talking about. And we talk about things like situational awareness. Where it gets scary for me is, you know, people think that something you can, you can measure or whatever. No, it's just a construct that people have crafted in order to describe when other inputs are blocking us from recognizing inputs that might be more critical at the time. And the other thing too is that pattern recognition that Don is talking about there, when you talk about awareness, that can deceive us sometimes, because sometimes you can't see what's novel to a pattern that you recognize, and that novelty might be what kills you. So it's a wickedly complex problem. And you know, we often talk about radio communications and the conversation about how much should be on the radio. And Don, I wanted to talk to you about this because we talk about during a Mayday, you know, and back in the day, Don, when this began, I remember, move the Mayday to another channel. And we quickly found out that was a really bad idea.
Yeah, if that, you perfect segue there, Chief Halton. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. There seems to be a movement, and I utilize, just for my, in my own department, we changed our policy pretty much based on your work and your study, your data, Don, in the fact that Maydays are happening. Your data came up, and you talk about it in the article about how quickly, you know, at what point in the fire ground the Maydays are happening within, you know, arrival time. And what I found and we used in my department was that, okay, what do we have on scene in the city of Elyria, Ohio, where I work, at the 10-minute mark or the 20-minute mark? And okay, so if Don Abbott's saying, his data is saying that Maydays are occurring, then what do we have on at the scene realistically? And then, well, is it worthwhile? You know, can we ask one command officer to be doing all this switching and all that? For me, your work, that is the one thing that I think has maybe changed a lot in the service, that they're going, that they're saying, stay on that channel. On one channel. And if you would, I would love for our listeners to hear in your own words, your thoughts on that, and Chief Halton's too.
Well, I think we've learned a lot about communications, and I think we got a lot more to learn. But I'll give you what I consider to be, for us, a good example. In the first 2.5 years, the number one Mayday was occurring when people fell through roofs or off roofs. As of June 30th of this year, it's dropped to number 4. So we're doing something as a whole to make a lot of these things better. And I think it's just a matter of understanding, communications-wise, when you have a Mayday and you change channels, it doesn't work, or it doesn't work very well, because I've got 7,000 audio tapes, and probably there's 3,000 there where I can show you it doesn't work. And I think part of the problem is that we rely upon a variety of different things, and we try to fight fires without I have a plan. My plan is this, but I need more resources to make the plan work. And we haven't necessarily accepted that as a problem. And I think that's become sort of a big deal. One of the areas that has really jumped out in the last 2 years is about 30% of all May Days occur before a battalion chief arrives. So that means a company officer who usually has not had the training nor the experience or has the resources on scene to really run a May Day well. And we struggle. And therefore, I think we've got to start preparing our company officers to run May Days. Because, like I said, 31% of the May Days are before a battalion chief gets there. So, and again, larger fire departments, you know, they're every 15 blocks, but that ain't true everywhere. And so I think it's an issue that we're starting to see. We're going back and looking at our previous data because we're always adding new ideas, new questions that we ask. So,
Chief, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think we should be taking May Day training down to the company officer level, to the engineer level, to the firefighter level. I mean, I just left a conversation with Tony Carroll, who produces our May Day Mondays. Don, you know Tony, the DC, DC chief, and does a wonderful job, like Don does. It's a fascinating construct to wrap our hands around. And I think we have to, you know, the Navy has a great saying. They say that self-preservation is its own reward, you know, right? So I think that when we talk about it at the most fundamental levels of recruit training, needs to be all the self-rescue technique. And in that the beginning of every self-rescue should begin with declaring that you're in trouble, you know, that, hey, I'm in trouble. And I would much rather have a crews evacuate a building and go full bore on a May Day that turns out to be not a May Day than have someone, you know, go further in. So I think that the acceptance of being able to say, hey, I'm in trouble on the fire ground has just grown exponentially in the last 30 years, which is a really, really good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also the fact that we all have very good radios on us now, that which is also another really, really good thing, because when Don and I began, you had to telegraph, you had to go to Western Union, just teasing. But you know, we were the company officer may have had a radio, you know, back
then. Yeah, exactly.
It may have had a radio, and then whether or not it got out of the building was a whole nother, you know, kettle of fish.
Sure. So
today, the fact that we can communicate so quickly, and also. And when Don and I came on, the fire behavior was much as it is now. The proliferation of plastics has been ubiquitous since the 40s and 50s. And now it's just, you know, off the scale, where I don't think anything's made of a natural product anymore, including human beings. But to Don's point and to your question, Joe, pushing the training down is critical, because the sooner that the member in trouble identifies the problem, you know, whether it's the crews nearby, whether it's the RIT team, whether it's self-rescue, it can begin in earnest. And I think that the hesitation, one should never hesitate when one thinks one's in trouble in the slightest.
And as we move along, one of the other items that I really would like our listeners to get your two takes on are when we're going to look at incident commanders. And the one thing that I find and is that, okay, I always use this example that a shift boss like myself of a small to medium-sized fire department wants to do some sort of, you know, he wants his crews to do some training. And they go out and they do their RIT bag stuff and their RIT and self-rescue, and that shift commander who will be running the fire stays in the office or maybe watches the training and doesn't, you know, there isn't that, what are you going to do, or what? How am I going to handle this? And when you look at the data and the information, you find that a lot of, in Don's interviews or surveys, the commanders say, we're not involved in the training. And I liken that to, like, if we were to get on an airplane, that the pilot goes, well, my co-pilot did a lot of work on the Maydays. I didn't do anything. I mean, you would never go on that kind of, you wouldn't go on that airplane. On a ship, the captain of a ship, of a Navy ship, I got to believe, Chief Halton, you know a lot about the Navy, that the boss of a ship would certainly be involved in how to save their men or how to, you know, handle that. I just find that just, that is just crazy to think that, and looking at the data, it just shows that there's such a large percentage. Don, is it still like that? Are you finding that the more you're looking into, you know, in the early part of your Mayday studies, that was, that data, that percentage was huge. Has it changed, or are you still finding the ICs saying, I didn't partake in training, or I didn't do my own training through, whether it's simulations or, you know, practicing on the radio or what have you?
I think it's getting better. I think it depends on two things. One, the size of the department. And right now, I think it's hard to do training because of the pandemic and because of a variety of other things that are going on as well. So we see it getting better. Is it where it should be? No. But at least we're getting better, I think, at it.
Chief Halton, you think it's ego?
No, it's odd to me to hear that to begin with, and I've seen it in Don's studies. I don't think it's ego. I think sometimes it's, I don't know, Don, you know, every now and then you'll run across folks that are so swamped by other stuff that they can't get out to the drill field.
That's true.
I really haven't found the shift supervisor, battalion chief, whatever, you know, district commander, whatever your title might be, that doesn't want to be there. Because one of the things that you can do, you know, you put yourself in the role of the victim, or you put yourself in the role of one of the crew members, and you get a better sense of the complexity. Don can speak to this really well, because I remember we were having we were somewhere in Phoenix, Don, you and I were, and we were waxing poetic with Chief B and some others a few years back about kind of this very phenomenal, right? That the, when you're in the buggy and you give a direction to someone, like, you know, move the line to the second floor, and you're waiting to, it's like Jeopardy, da, 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 right, Don? And then,
yes.
But you have to remember that in the real world, unlike simulation sometimes, just saying, okay, I want a line up the second floor. Okay, now you have a line on the second floor. So, which is not real, but when you do the physical drill on a drill field, or you get an acquired structure, then you get a much better sense as an incident commander, especially if you've, you know, don't get to do the daily drill as much as the troops do, of the time task relationship. And a lot of tasks take a great deal of time to evolve depending on manpower conditions, building, you know, layout, a wide variety of factors. So I would probably say, Joe, that the men and women who were not able to participate in the training were so encumbered by, you know, when you look at the amount of paperwork that you're cranking out every day, and when you look at all the meetings you have to attend and the reports you have to fill out and the fitness reviews and supply requisitions and then just trying to keep pace with what's going on in the fire service, you know, on a daily basis, I can see where occasionally some officers may have missed some of this critical training, But to Don's point, we're getting so much better, you know, and that's why I think, and I'll make a shameless plug, you know, events like FDIC, where an officer can take a week and go do drilling at the speed of flashover, can go do, you know, a VES class, can go do, you know, 2 days of hands-on training and catch a wide variety of skill sets that they may not, because of other responsibilities while on the job, have been able to avail themselves of. But they can shamelessly, you know, enjoy themselves by drilling, you know, relentlessly for 2 days. And I've found it to be a tremendous outlet for me anyway, you know, and I would highly recommend it. You know, if you can't free yourself up during your normal, you know, tour, avail yourself of a conference and go, you know, and it doesn't have to just be FDIC. There's hands-on training everywhere and great troops that bring it in. And Don and I know several folks that do wonderful work on Mayday drills, and really can push you to the limits. But I don't think it's a you know, I hate to ascribe motive to anybody. I think it's just that the system, Chief B, again, to quote our dear friend, you know, it's hard to outperform the system, right? And if your system doesn't avail you a few hours a day to drill, irrespective of your rank, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Let me add one thing to that sort of.
Sure.
It's just not the IEDs. When we look at the percentage of participation in crews, and we look at a four-person crew, over the last basically 18 to 24 months, the person having the most maydays is the engineer, because they only go in on one out of every 11 fires.
Wow.
Because they're usually, but when you go to training, what are they doing? They're pumping. So all of a sudden now I'm taking them in as part of my crew, which I normally, I'm with two people, now I've got three, and they haven't worn an air pack for a while probably. They haven't been part of crew training probably for a while. So it's not their fault. It's just our system has not incorporated all the pieces and players in the way that we should.
Wow. Okay, the giant, and I mentioned to this Chief Holland before he joined, Don and I, somewhere out there in the fire service web, there was an article about Maydays increasing during this pandemic. And Don, I would love to hear, you know, again from you on, and Chief Halton's thoughts too, on why you think that is. Is that good quality data coming in, or is this just something, you know, why are we seeing this? Why are we seeing an increase, and how is it correlating with what's happening in the world today, right now with the pandemic?
Well, what our data has shown us is we get on the average 5 or 6 maydays every day. And I believe we only probably get about 25% of all maydays. Then all of a sudden we noticed in mid-March that it was going from 5 to 6 to 8 to 9.
Why though? Why do you think? I'm just,
well, I, you know, and I would hate to say it's because of the pandemic. I mean, that's attribution error, right? It's like when people say, well, the use of something caused a decrease in this or that. Well, sure. Maybe, maybe not. You know, it's like they say that they got a new coach, so now the team's winning, and it's because of the new coach. Well, maybe the old coach laid the foundation. So attribution is always a fascinating thing. And right now, especially when you're talking about a small sample of data, like 4 months, it could be people have more time because they're not doing other things, so they can do more reporting about the maydays, or maybe because we published Don's article and it got such widespread readership.
Right.
That's what I would say, right, Don? It was it could be, you know, it's hard to pin down. I don't think that any of the maydays that we've been receiving or hearing about had anything to do with the pandemic. But I don't know. You enjoy
it. It's interesting. It's interesting. I was just kind of curious, you know. If,
yeah. And it's good to look at. It's good to look at what's going on, and try to draw some correlation. But divining causality is really, really tough work, and
right.
Really requires as Don will tell you, as he's been at this for a long, long time. Oftentimes we start off with an idea of what lies at the bottom of something, only to have it completely upturned by our research.
As we start to wind this down, Don, you know, when you talk about the data, and there's mountains and mountains of it, and for, again, our listeners that will go to your website, and click on the, at the very bottom, you have the two different PDF slides, whether you're volunteer, part-time, and professional. What would you say to the average city officer, boss, or fireman that's listening to this, of those, each one's over 300 slides, but what would you tell them if they had to to zero in, what would you recommend that they take away from with right away to someone that may not be aware of all your research into this and might be, you know, getting involved in this project for the first time, or, you know, reading the article and then going to the website? What specific would you want them to take away and get out of this?
I'm back.
Oh, did we lose you?
Yeah, you lost me.
Oh, okay. I'll repeat it. I'm sorry. So what would you say, Don, in your own words, if there's an average, you know, average size firefighter, officer, lieutenant, whatever, that goes to your website, you know, reads the article, goes to the website, is unaware of all your work until now and looking at this, what are some of the takeaways? You know, they're 300 slides in each, the volunteer and the paid, depending on what you are. A lot of people won't take the time to go through. What would you want that officer to hear from your mouth right now on what they would want to maybe focus on from your work?
Well, for company officers, you're the most important piece of the puzzle. I think the company officer is the most important person on a fire department because they're there 24 hours a day supervising, training, et cetera, with basically their firefighters. From a mayday standpoint, is just be more aware of your surroundings, and more important, listen to the radio. Listen to what everybody's got to say, not just what you've got to. And look at our 16 clues. We went back and listened to more than 5,000 audio tapes, and we found 16 pieces of radio traffic. That if you hear one of these, you should really start listening to the radio. If you hear two, be prepared, because usually the third thing you hear is mayday, mayday, mayday.
And those items, you know, again, if we're talking high heat, what are some of the other, quickly, I know we can't go through all 16, but what are some of those audio cues?
Being caught in a flashover, reporting conditions, going in farther than you realize, you know, and then being asked, would you extend my line? Can't find the seat of the fire. You've been in the fire for 10 minutes with zero visibility and things aren't getting any better. Those kinds of things. When you start hearing those should be things that cue you to start listening to the radio more. If somebody's going to say something that you're not even aware of.
Chief Halton, have you ever, your time on the job, any close, real close calls or maydays that you've either, you know, been involved or had a run as a boss?
Yeah, quite a few, actually.
I would love to hear, if you don't mind, you know, when they happened, and your own personal feelings now, you know, I mean, you can look back and obviously a different, you know, we have so much more information and everything, but I would love for our listeners to hear from someone who actually, you know, was on the front sidewalk or had the portable or, you know, was running. Hey, what went through your mind and after the fact, or, you know, some of the outcomes of your own personal well-being and thought process going forward from that?
So I'll tell two real quick stories, and Don knows both of them. So, and we've talked about them in the past together.
I don't mean to put you on the spot either.
No, it's quite all right. So I'll give one as an actual person who called the mayday. Residential fire, fairly large residential, and I called a mayday. I got caught in a master bedroom closet. Couldn't find my way out, mm-hmm. And the folks had hung clothing on the back of the door, and I was searching off the line at the time, which we did routinely. I was I think I was on the rescue. Anyway, fascinating experience to be running low on air, calling a mayday. And back then, we didn't have the elaborate training that we have today. And if you want to know what the minutes on the fire ground really feel like to that person, it's a very unique experience, because I remember every second of it like it was yesterday. And I also remember the good-natured chiding and ribbing from the guys who basically took me out of the closet. We're here, Lieutenant. You can calm down now. Kind of thing, which is great. And I'd rather take a good ribbing than you know, succumb to running out of air. So anyway, but it was fascinating. You know, if you'd asked me to come up with a mnemonic or lunar or anything like that at that point in time, it's doubtful. It's doubtful I could have told you my mother's maiden name. I mean, you're
right.
The best thing to do is put someone on the radio with them that they know and trust, to be as calm as you can to try to elicit information. And Don talks about that
extensively
in his presentations. And so as the rescuee, always remember that person at that point in time in their mind is coming to terms with their mortality, which is a fascinating experience. And the second one, having been a chief officer, and Don, I watched, Don knows this story well too. I watched one of my firefighters crossing what appeared to be a perfectly good roof during what we had came in as a basement fire, and dropped through it like a hot knife through butter, and uh-huh. ended up in a garage that was fairly well involved. And subsequently we had to perform the rescue. And you talk about task, time, discipline. And at the time, Don, which is interesting, if you're the only chief officer on scene and you've got a working fire, multiple crews, exterior, roof, and now you've got a mayday, that's a, you know, and at that time we weren't rolling other battalion chiefs to cover. We didn't have fits. We didn't have field training. We didn't have incident command people with us. We didn't have, you know, drivers. So that was
I was on my own.
Working fire, multiple crews, literally just put the car in park, looked up and watched one of my guys fall through the roof.
Wow.
By himself. And no one was yet on the roof with him. He literally had gotten off the ground ladder to the roof. He'd put a roof ladder to the peak. He took two other steps and was gone. So managing those things in real time is fascinating. And Don's work is really so critical to all of us to go through and to talk about and do some scenario planning. What would we do if, what would we do when? And if nothing else, it just helps us with building mental models, right? Other avenues to go down, building other alternatives, because we work off patterns and models and doing more and more simulations, fits and reps, as they call it in Blue Card, helps you to put more models in your slideshow so that you can have more alternatives in your working memory, which is the key to being able to make great decisions and having support. I can't tell you enough about having support. So, you know, Don's work goes a long way. I did have a quick question for you, Don. Years ago, we talked about 75-25, and I'm trying to remember the third number. Don't get old. Remember we used to say the Maydays? Remember Alan's original comment? Did we lose Don again?
Don, are you there? Okay.
Remember it was 25-75 and 75 feet from the curb.
Right.
No more than 25 people on scene, and I think 5 minutes.
Right. Yes.
And you're right. And we always talk about that. And the other thing I think we need to throw in there, Don, and this is just me speaking, and I'd love for you to start asking this question. What is the experience level of the people involved? In other words, what's the average point in time in their careers? In other words, just to look at some of the behavioral patterns, just anecdotally, I'm not describing anything to it, but just to look at the behavioral patterns, do they have 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years, 12 years, 13 years? You know, because remember that we had that interesting study that was going 15 years ago that looked at the most critical, most dangerous time in your career as a firefighter. And it turned out to be between, I think, 7 and 11 years, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah. And that almost coincides with what we found. We found that when we first started, the average was between 7.5 and 9.5. Today, it is closer to 5.5 to 7.5.
Huh.
Yeah, the experience level has actually dropped significantly.
Do you have a philosophy? Do you have a thought on why that is? Either one of you two want to comment on it? Why has it dropped,
for me,
or why that?
You take it first, Don.
For me. Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead, Don. You get it. You go first. Oh, on
this one. Okay. I think two things. Number one, we're finding that more and more fire departments are younger and younger. Mm-hmm. And I think the second thing is we're not seeing as many fires. And most of the maydays we are getting today, and it's almost 38%, I believe, are in commercial buildings, because we're going into bigger buildings, older buildings, and treating it with a residential mentality. And we're getting our butts kicked.
So, and I would add a possible fourth contender. So we're kind of going through and this gets a little weird into philosophy, but bear with me, and I apologize in advance. But with the advent of widespread postmodernism being ingrained into our educational system, post-educational system over the last 40 years, we now have a widespread sense of presentism, as if we know more, maybe earlier. You know what I mean? In other words, mm-hmm. we actually believe our own BS. And so that being said, maybe we're dumber younger, which is the simple way of saying it. But it used to take us longer to become so arrogant about our capabilities. And I've always thought, Don, what we need to do, and Don and I will tell you that this is, we have actual hard science to prove this. If we could put a 50-year-old firefighter on every crew, we could solve half the world's problems. Because anybody that says anybody that close to their pension and with that much time under their belt, know better than to be. You can be bold and you can be brave, but you want to be old and bold and brave.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I agree there 100% that, you know, the best thing for young firefighters is having a crew of older firefighters.
Right. So, right. It's there was a great study of African forest, and I can never pronounce the name, Abgamzwabi or something, where they wanted to introduce a very healthy elephant herd. So the idea was to bring in some females and then bring in some young male elephants that had not yet fully reached maturity, so that you'd have a fresh strain of hereditary for breeding purposes. Well, what they found was that those young males without the old male presence became destructive. They became violent. They started doing things. They actually started raping the rhinos. The male elephants start to rape rhinos, which is unheard of, never happened before. And as soon as they reintroduced older elephants, their behavior normalized. See, they had no role model to connect to. So if you're a chief officer and you are putting a crew together, seriously, mixing seasoned people with younger people is always a good idea.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you for this time. And as we close up, I'd like some final comments overall on, you know, just calling Maydays, the Mayday Project overall. First, Chief Halton, any final words of wisdom in regards to Don's work, this article, and any sage advice to our listeners on Project Mayday and handling of the Maydays?
Well, first of all, if you haven't looked at the project yet, please do so. And as you're doing so, remember that the person who's behind it, Don, has been involved in firefighting his entire life. His career spans a fantastic career, going all the way back to Indianapolis and then all the way through his Phoenix days. And he has always been incredibly interested in every aspect of it, but phenomenally interested in incident command and in emergency, you know, the actual emergency protocols and procedures that we go through. So you couldn't have a more seasoned, a more reasonable, a more eloquent voice behind the project. And the other thing about the project is that because Don Abbott is behind it, it's a probing project. In other words, it's not giving you answers, it's giving you questions, it's giving you data, and it's giving you starting points for your own kind of investigation as to where you are in your preparation for the worst case scenario on the potential mayday of either yourself or one of your crew members. So always keep those three points in mind, that the work that you're looking at is a lifetime of work, and that it's a project that's continually ongoing, and that the most important piece of it is you and your worldview and your experience, and how do you take this Project Mayday into your day-to-day. And you know, we always say expect the unexpected, but Project Mayday really helps you to remember that at any point in time, your entire worldview could be shattered by that, by those three words over the radio, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. And getting yourself as ready as one possibly can is what Project Mayday is all about. And the fire service owes Don a huge debt of gratitude for the work he's done and the work he's continuing to do on helping us understand what goes on at those crucial moments.
Don, again, thank you. Any final words from you, obviously, on this? A little bit, if you want to, your website, if people want to get in touch with you or, you know, perhaps have you, you know, do some work, or if they have a Mayday or want to talk to you first before, you know, getting online, how they can do that.
Yeah, I'll make a couple of comments before I say that. I think that one of the things, as times change and money's going tight, is that we have to go out and make an investment in our training by going to FDIC, by going out of our own realm of safety to learn what other people are doing that works or maybe doesn't work. But understanding that it's got to work for your organization based on its size and a variety of other things. So that training is extremely important in fire engineering. The articles that are in there are timely and good information, regardless of what it's about. For us, we're working on a couple of different specific areas that have been brought to our attention, and we'll be putting more information out in the near future. I hope to write a couple of more articles here in the near future for fire engineering. Our website is projectmayday.net. It will be updated with new information, with new audio tapes and some videotapes of May Days, August the 15th. So anytime after August 15th, it will be updated with new information, new static, new statistics and data. My personal email is donaldeabbott@yahoo.com. And again, if you want to report a May Day, just go to Project May Day and make the report. We're getting about 5.5 to 6 every day. We welcome them, and I hope we don't have more to report. But if we do, we're gathering and grooming the information and pumping out the data to help people in the future prevent May Days, because that's what we're about. How do we prevent them?
Absolutely. And finally, I'll say this to our listeners, that as being a person right now that's in a firehouse that's trying to, you know, do the right thing and train and find ways to get the attention of those that you're trusted with their safety, it's something like this that gives you it is fantastic information that you can then take and apply it to your department. There's so much out there that a lot of times you look at as a boss and go, man, this doesn't really fit for my department. What Don has done fits every department, from the smallest two-person shift to the FDNY. It's just like Chief Halton says, he's asking the questions. And you can take what applies to you and your department and your staffing and help it prevent a Mayday for
in your department and to better prepare for when that does happen. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you, and I appreciate your time.
Stay safe.
Thank you for having us, Joe. And Don, thank you again for all you're doing for us. And looking forward to seeing you in April at FDIC. And I'm going to take the class again.
Okay, well,